This is Edinburgh Student Radio Station.
I would listen to this.
This is Fresh Air.
Good evening. It is 13 minutes past six and you're listening to the Fresh Air News Hour on Fresh Air Radio. I'm Ollie Lewis, the new head of news here at the radio station, and I am buzzing to be back with you after the pandemic. So here's how it's going to work. In every news show, I'm going to be joined by a different co-host. We're going to be talking about the biggest news stories of the week, both serious and lighthearted. We're going to be bringing you interviews, chat and music. This week's co-host is Rosa. Good evening, good to be with you.
Hello, lovely to be here.
And on today's show, we're going to be talking about, of course, Girls' Night In. It is the 28th of October and the club boycott is tonight. How did it all come about? And what's going to be the implications? We have continued budget reaction from the Chancellor, Rishi Sunak's budget delivered yesterday, and COP26 continues to approach. We're going to be having all the analysis and an extended interview with FemSoc, the university's feminist society, on the issue of Girls' Night In. But in a moment, we're going to start with our news headlines. The time is 14 minutes past six. The red list for travel from England is set to be eliminated from next week. Passengers returning from the seven countries that remain on the list, including Peru and Colombia, will no longer have to isolate in hotels in what the Transport Secretary Grant Shapps has called a great boost for travel. Scotland's First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, has called on protest groups, including Extinction Rebellion, not to plan action that will disrupt Glasgow residents during the upcoming COP26 summit. Climate campaigner Greta Thunberg has confirmed she will join a protest on the 5th of November. It all comes as ScotRail announces it has called off planned industrial action for over the next week. A 19-year-old man has been charged with the murder of two sisters in a park in North London. Daniel Hussein has been jailed for life and will spend a minimum of 35 years behind bars. And finally on our headlines, France is attempting to calm tensions after some of its officials seized a British vessel in an ongoing quarrel about post-Brexit fishing rights. The Environment Secretary, George Eustace, is said to be urgently looking into the situation. Good evening and welcome to the Fresh Air News Hour. This is our first ever show, post-pandemic at least. My name's Ollie Lewis. I am the brand new head of news here at Fresh Air Radio Station. I'm delighted to be with you and I'm equally delighted to be joined in the studio by Rosa.
Hi, I'm Rosa Georgiou. Lovely to be here.
How are you doing? So you're looking forward to getting into some of the week's biggest stories?
Absolutely, can't wait. I'm used to writing down my opinions. It would be nice to talk them through
to start talking about them, of course, yeah, because you do some writing for the student newspaper, of course.
Yes, normally in film and television, so watch me get
film and television
tonight.
Interesting. Well, sometimes, to be fair, sometimes one of some of the most interesting news stories are those about film and television. There's plenty of new blockbuster films coming out. Of course, James Bond recently came out, so insight on that will definitely be relevant. So today is the 28th of October, and when I was assigned the slot for the first news show, I was told it was a Thursday. I thought, great. And then I was told that the 28th of October will be the first day that we will actually be doing a live show. And here we are. And of course, the 28th of October is the hashtag Girls Night In. Now, Girls Night In, I'm sure you are all aware, is a campaign that has emerged in the wake of numerous reports of spiking around Edinburgh. It was started by student Martha Williams in Edinburgh from Edinburgh University in third year. And it's expanded across the country, has gone nationwide, it has made national headlines. And essentially, students over yesterday, today and tomorrow will be boycotting nightclubs. Nightclubs in which they don't feel safe because women are getting spiked. Rosa, when did you first hear about this campaign? And, you know, what are your impressions of how quickly it has blown up across the country?
I think I probably share a lot of people in that I first saw it on Instagram. Obviously, I've been following the spiking all week on the news. It's quite a scarily developing story, although that said, it's a very common problem which has been happening throughout years. But so I saw on Instagram, Edinburgh I think was the first one that came up, and since then it's been replicated across multiple universities, Lots of people calling it Big Night In. There's Manchester Night In, Glasgow Night In. Lots of different student groups particularly taking the lead on this, which is really nice and really interesting to see the intersection of Instagram boycotts, Instagram being used as a platform where these things are being spread. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's interesting. A lot of people say that young people are too obsessed with social media, don't they? They say that we sit on our phones all day, especially people in schools. And to some extent, of course, that's true. And screens can have a damaging impact. But what's your reflection on how useful social media has been? Basically, this campaign would not have been possible of 5-10 years ago, at least.
Yeah, I think particularly we've all learned a lot of lessons from lockdown here. If we look back to Black Lives Matter last summer, a lot of the way that was spread, particularly among our age group, among students, was through Instagram. And I think it's important that we remain critical of these Instagram campaigns, the speed at which a lot of information, particularly around the spiking. I think there's been some really interesting reporting this week about the reports of needle spiking. And the pace at which news about that spread and fears about that spread sometimes is blown out of proportion into...
Well, there's been a degree of misinformation, hasn't there?
Exactly.
I saw graphics on Instagram saying that people were being injected with HIV in nightclubs with these needles. And I think it was Sophia Smith-Gaylor, who is a journalist for Vice World News. She wrote an article sort of looking at the facts of all of this. Mm. And actually, whilst there have been over 50 reported instances of spiking by injection in the UK, which is utterly terrifying and is absolutely rightly one of the main drivers of this campaign, it is of a far lesser prevalence to drink spiking. But of course, you don't want that to change in future. So talk to me, Rosa, about your experiences. Obviously, you're a woman, I'm not. What do you know friends who this has happened to? Do you get the impression that people don't really feel safe on nights out, especially this year as compared to previous years?
Yes, it's interesting. I say I'm lucky. It shouldn't be that way, but I am lucky in that I've never had a direct experience of it. But that said, there are modifications I take on every single night out, which I will continue to take on every single night out, which most of the times I don't second think. I will never buy a drink on a night out. I don't walk around a nightclub floor with a drink.
You've never bought a drink on a night out?
No, I'll get a shot at the bar, but you will not see me carrying a vodka lime soda.
What's
on the dance
shot
floor?
Of choice?
Oh, vodka. Go straight for the vodka.
Sorry, back to the news.
But then again, it goes to show, though, because there are cases where it's the bartenders. So the fact that even that's not safe, and even those small modifications we all take, you know, I don't carry a drink, so no one drops something in it, but it could be the man behind the bar who puts it in. So
absolutely.
I think it's time that this comes to light, really.
So many people have been raising awareness and supporting the Girls Night In campaign. So many of the university societies, one of them is FemSoc, the university's feminist society, who have obviously been staunch supporters of this campaign. They are all taking part in the boycott tonight. And in order to get sort of a different perspective on this, a slightly more ideological perspective on how they think this campaign has come about, the depressing reasons for it coming about, earlier today I sat down with Frances Roberts from FemSoc, and this is what she had to say about the campaign. So, Frances, when did you first hear about the club boycott?
So I think it was back in kind of middle of October, when, you know, instances of spiking were really, really starting to spike, you know, increase, kind of just reach levels that, you know, we've never really seen before, I feel like, in certainly in my memory of kind of going out clubbing. I mean, it's never something that I even like considered before, this kind of going out, and now it's just like, you know, every single woman that you talk to, it's on their mind, and it's of concern, and it's, you know, it's dictating our movements, where we feel safe to go out. It's kind of, it is something that really does kind of control what you feel comfortable to do. So obviously it kind of went viral on social media fairly quickly across the country. And, you know, it does seem to be fairly prevalent across cities in Scotland. And obviously I think Edinburgh is one of the worst places for it. But, you know, I think Nottingham's quite bad as well, and Bristol. And, you know, there are lots of cities in England that are seeing kind of similar patterns as well.
And do you have any inclination of why this increase in spiking might have happened? Because, of course, spiking isn't necessarily an organised crime. You don't really have gangs of people who go around spiking. It's a cultural crime. It's people thinking, this is an acceptable thing to do. I can get away with this, so I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. So why do you think that culture has increased so much in the last few months?
I mean, I think there's various factors behind this, really. I think one of the big ones is coming out of lockdown and, you know, the fact that I think, you know, a lot of people being cooped up inside, it really does, you know, you're alone with your thoughts and it's not good in terms of, you know, it does promote kind of extremist views and, you know, discriminatory views. And I think it's allowed these kind of perceptions and outlooks to kind of breed and and you know, people spending a lot of time online and just kind of not being confronted with that challenging perspective. And I think in terms of misogyny and sexism, like, that's been, you know, in this instance really, really damaging for that. And you know, the rise of kind of the incel culture, obviously we had the shooting in Plymouth kind of, you know, a few months ago now, and you know, this movement online in terms of men who are really feeling quite kind of, you know, angry at society and angry at feminism and feeling like they are, you know, hard done by what, you know, what we're trying to promote, and they feel like they're being left behind. And then that's kind of mixed in with, you know, the changing kind of modern dating system. And, you know, so there's definitely, that's a big, big part of it. And yeah, I think just kind of, yeah, just, you know, increasing levels in misogyny in general. And also the fact that spiking has ridiculously low conviction rates. It's so easy to get away with. It's just like, you know, if you are a man, or obviously, you know, it is mostly men that are committing spiking, but, you know, women do it as well. But, you know, if you are someone that is feeling angry, is feeling like you're not being represented, then it's, you know, it's a fairly obvious choice to go for, because, you know, the likelihood that you're actually going to face any repercussions for what you've done is so minimal that it's just, yeah, it's an easy option for a lot of people, I think.
And of course, the boycott has gained huge traction, and a lot of people will be taking part tonight in Edinburgh. What message do you think it is sending to the nightclubs? And regardless of that message, do you think they think they're understanding the message? Do you think they're reacting in the right ways?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting one, actually. I think it's sending a very strong message to nightclubs, especially as it's going to be a weekly boycott now, I think.
Oh, really?
What I'm kind of seeing on social media. Yeah, well, that's kind of what I've heard. I don't think it was originally intended to be that.
Wow, but that's definitely, you know, the first I've heard of that. That would be quite something if that was the case, yeah.
Yeah. So I think, you know, initially there was a bit of concern that just one night, you know, wouldn't really do much. And I think that's very valid. But yeah, I think it's interesting because, you know, we are seeing clubs take notice of this. You know, I mean, I can't remember which club it was, but there's one that is closing on that night.
Yeah, Bourbon.
Bourbon, that's it. Yeah. And then there's quite a few others that have, you know, put some posters up around the place, and obviously, you know, implementing these lids and things like that. But to me, it feels very surface level. It feels like they're just doing it because they know that if they aren't seen to be doing anything, then it'll be bad for business. And people won't, you know, because people don't feel safe going to these places at the moment. A lot of people don't. So, you know, and I have a friend that went out last week, and, you know, her group of friends were the only women in the club. So it was just like, yeah. And, you know, she said they felt so unsafe, and like, it was just a really nasty environment. So I think, yeah, clubs are very, you know, aware of this, and it is sending a very strong message. But to me, you know, they aren't taking it seriously enough yet. And I think a big part of the problem is their staff. You know, bouncers are, a lot of them on Cowgate are notorious for just like lacking basic compassion, really, when it comes to a lot of these things. And I've just heard countless numbers of stories of, you know, women that have been spiked, that get separated from their friends. They're not allowed back into the club because they're, you know, they look like they're too drunk to be let back in, but obviously actually, you know, that obviously they've had a bit to drink, but the main reason is that they're just, you know, they're traumatized, they're overwhelmed, they don't know what, you know, what's going on. And it's like the fact that you can leave vulnerable women, like, you know, late at night, like out on the street, and just kind of think that's okay. I think there's something very, very fundamentally wrong with that. And, you know, I've heard stories about like bartenders spiking people. So, you know, it's not like something, you know, that's just kind of isolated to people coming to these clubs. It's actually within the very like staff and the structures that are already existing there.
Yeah. And you mentioned that clubs want to be seen to do something. And I think this, that's a point that a lot of people have raised regarding the boycott, in that clubs making the decision to close this evening, some people see as a commercial decision and as a financial decision, not as a moral one, because you had clubs, and it's not just Bourbon, and I don't want to get into naming institutions, but the clubs have released, a lot of clubs have released statements saying that they stand in solidarity with this and that. But I think they know that if their club is empty tonight, they won't make any money, and so they need to close. Also, again, I won't name the club, but I know people recently went to most clubs have now put lids on all their drinks, and they were asking people at the bar to take pictures of the drinks with lids on and put those pictures on their story,
right,
tagging the club, saying. So I don't want to get involved in a sort of fight with bouncers, because no one wants to do that, and I'm sure a lot of them mean well, but there is a problem around nightlife staffing, isn't there?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's, you don't want to kind of come across as saying like all bouncers are bad, and you know, because that's just not the reality of things, but you know, unfortunately, we don't know the scale of the problem. Like, there's no real research on this. We don't know, like, you know, what kind of checks they have to go through to actually, you know, maintain their license to be able to, like, hold a security position. You know, I just think there's such little transparency. And so it is so easy to kind of, you know, have a bad, like a negative image of people like that, because it's
So in terms of solutions, a lot of things have been thrown around, you know, checks, lids on drinks. What's your impression of all of this? Is the conversation going in the right direction? Is it not talking about legislation enough? Is it focusing too much on sort of fighting the issue rather than prevention? What's your impression?
Yeah, so I mean, you know, it's important to kind of have like smaller short-term changes that are going to kind of affect things immediately, because, you know, we need to feel safe now. Like, we can't just be focused on, you know, the bigger long-term changes, but obviously they are, you know, equally as important. Yeah, I mean, it's difficult because it's easy to, when you're talking about lids and, you know, like checks into clubs or like kind of those kind of things, it's easy to veer into victim blaming and to just focus on women and, you know, what they can do to prevent kind of getting spiked. And it's like, we actually need to shift the narrative here to what, you know, because it's predominantly men doing the spiking, like what men need to be doing so that they, you know, don't think spiking is acceptable, like on a night out. I think that's so fundamental.
And of course, you are from the feminist society.
Yeah.
A lot of men feel uncomfortable declaring themselves as feminists. I know that. I'm sure you know that as well.
Yeah.
Do you think that is part of the problem? Do you think this sort of feminism being a dirty word, championing issues that don't necessarily directly help them, is uncomfortable for a lot of people? That's a problem.
I mean, you know, it's definitely a problem within feminism. I think, you know, we are, as a feminist society, we, over the last year, we've done a lot of work in terms of trying to get men more involved and, you know, trying to, as I was talking about before, shift the narrative so that, you know, like we are making them men accountable for, you know, their part in this patriarchal culture. But essentially what's so important is to frame it as not men versus women, but people versus the patriarchy, like coming together, because, you know, obviously it's has a detrimental impact on, you know, everyone. Like, you know, there are so many issues that, you know, men have to deal with, obviously suicide rates and mental health problems, and, you know, not kind of being able to gain access to services in the same way that women are in terms of kind of family, you know, like custody and those kind of things, and, you know, working in more dangerous jobs. Like those are all issues that, you know, men have to deal with, but, you know, they all come back to kind of stereotypes around gender, and that's what, you know, we are trying to tackle. But it's, you know, it's difficult because women have been like neglected for so long, and so feminism is mainly focused on women, obviously, because, you know, like we need to get women to the same, you know, like equal status as men in society. And obviously in order to do that, you have to put more energy into that group. But, you know, we are very like open to issues that men face. And I think that it's definitely something that feminism is moving towards, is, you know, we can't get to an equal society without including both genders and without having male allies. Like that's so, so important.
And if we're talking about communication and, you know, the message of wanting people to change, is it too late for the men who are now our age, you know, in their 20s or a bit younger, is it too late for them if they already think that it's acceptable to be spiking people on a night out? It's all very well saying we need to educate our young men and boys, and in 20 years' time, this might not be an issue. But right now, the issue is on prevention. It's on lids and searches, because an Instagram infographic isn't going to convince someone who currently thinks that it's acceptable to spike women.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's such a tricky one, isn't it? I mean, you know, it's how do we reach out to those men? I mean, how do we identify them, first of all? Because, that's such a big problem. And yeah, I think we're such a long way from getting to that place that it's kind of like, yeah, that's the first step, and we can't really do much else without knowing who these men are, first of all. And then, you know, yeah, obviously the next challenge is to try and understand, you know, exactly why it is that they think that's acceptable. But yeah, you know, I think I want to try and be optimistic about this. I want to, you know, because that's, you know, hope is the only kind of way that, you know, you can fuel kind of constructive activism. But, you know, it is going to be a tricky kind of thing to navigate, definitely.
Of course. Just before we finish, I can only assume that you're taking part in the boycott tonight. How will you be spending your evening, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, I'll definitely be taking part. So we're the Feminist Society. We're actually organising an open mic night as kind of like a sober event that people can come to. And yeah, it's like an alternative to going out. So
yeah,
I will be
brilliant.
Watching all the incredible performers. So yeah.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for speaking to us, Frances Roberts. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Ollie.
That was Frances Roberts of the University of Edinburgh's Feminist Society. Such an interesting conversation, I thought, Elise. And I think her being from the Feminist Society is significant, I think, because what is often missed from conversations about this, in my opinion, is the sort of the political nature of this crime. If you think about it at its root, the question really is, why do these men think it is acceptable to take ownership of a woman's body? That's what they're doing in spiking someone. And so this is so beyond making sure that people don't have the means to spike people, or they don't have the equipment to do it, or the drugs to be able to do it. This is ideological education that's needed, really, if we are to tackle the problem at the root. Rosa, so tonight is of course the boycott, as we've said. There has been some criticism that staying in, it's not necessarily criticism I agree or disagree with, but it's that staying in tonight isn't the best reaction, because they've accused the campaign of forcing women to cower in fear. It's quite a controversial view. What's your view on that?
I think it's important here to remember that staying in is not advice here. It's not being given out as a guidance to safety. I think what we've seen a lot of recently is, particularly in the police and particularly in statements that have been given by the police in response to other cases of randomised female violence against women, such as with Sarah Everard, where we've had police officers standing there and saying, well, if you do this, you will be safer. Now, that's not what this is. This isn't advice saying if you stay in, you're not going to get spiked tonight and that's great for you. It's not promoting a victim-focused responsibility. That's not the aim of it, at least. Rather, it's trying to call for accountability here and trying to pressure on clubs. Some claims that the economic pressure is not actually that great, but we are seeing a lot of clubs turning around and releasing statements in direct response to this. So I think there is a big point to make here that staying in is not advice that has been given to promote our safety. It's in complete reaction and in saying we are not putting up for people who won't even consider our safety.
Of course. And on the issue I raised in the interview about clubs asking people to promote the fact that they're taking this issue seriously and clubs posting lengthy statements online to show evidence of them doing that. Surely there is some goodwill here on the part of the nightclubs. They want to attract people who feel comfortable in their venues. And so surely this is the closures tonight and the goodwill signals that they're giving out on social media. It's not all virtual signalling, is it?
I mean, goodwill doesn't keep people safe with the best of intentions. And I think it's something we're going to have to watch out for. And that's why it needs to continue beyond that one night. Staying in, this shouldn't be the end. I know that for a lot of people, this is the beginning of a big Halloween weekend. So I know that there's going to be a lot of people who are staying in tonight, but whose weekends are going to be very orientated around clubbing. And I think that's one of the perhaps limitations of this, is that because spiking is such a randomised act of violence in many cases, it could be any night. So what we've got to continue here is keep the impetus of this could happen to us at any night. So we need to make sure that we are holding them to account every night. So it's not enough for them to ask us to post a photo of a plastic cup, but it should be the bare minimum that they continue these changes into the future and actually work harder to ensure that there are better training in place and such that will stop this happening, hopefully.
Yeah, and just before we came on air, we heard that actually they are going to go beyond this club boycott, aren't they?
Yes, so this weekend, Saturday the 30th of October, starting at 5:30 in Bristow Square, FemSoc is organising a march which will begin in Bristow Square and walk through to Parliament. I'd really urge you all to be there. It should be really great. One of the other things about staying in is you don't have the psychological strength you get from a march. I know a lot of people, a lot of my friends have been really scared by this news. A lot of the Instagram information, a lot of what people are seeing online is scary. And I think there's a certain strength that you don't get from staying in, but you get from being with people and from standing up and standing together. So if you want some of that, I would really recommend the strike organised by FemSoc this Saturday at 5:30 p.m.
Wonderful, yeah. So that is, of course, the top story this week on the Fresh Air News Hour, that tonight is the Girls' Night In campaign. The club boycott will be going ahead tonight. Many clubs are closed, and we'll see the implications of that. Now, in other news, yesterday, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rishi Sunak, delivered his budget. It was the first budget, of course, since the economy fully reopened, and it wasn't very conservative, to be quite honest. They were opening the spending taps in a way that people didn't quite expect them to be doing, of course. And he reflected on it, saying that he was extremely optimistic about the future of the economy.
Let's begin the work of preparing for a new economy post-COVID. The Prime Minister's economy of higher wages, higher skills and rising productivity, of strong public services, vibrant communities and safer streets. An economy fit for a new age of optimism.
A new age of optimism, Rishi Sunak there. Of course, growth was revised up from 4% to 6.5%. A key line was that every government department was to get a real terms increase in their spending budget. Foreign aid, which of course has only just been cut by the government, is due to return to 0.7% of GDP, along with numerous other announcements in the budget. 50% business rate discount for hospitality for a year, of course, one of the industries most heavily hit during the pandemic. Rosa, there was a lot of spending going on. There were a lot of promises. What do you think, though, on that point about optimism from Rishi Sunak? Do you think the British people share in his optimism?
I think the main response for today is that there is nothing this budget could do that could be enough. In contrast to his optimism, Sunak has also said that there's no magic wand that will fix the rise in living costs. And I think that's a central thing we've seen out of this budget, is that living costs are going up. And even though spending on healthcare and education is going to increase a bit, and that's obviously welcomed by a lot of people, that it's not going to do enough to hit against those who are being hardest hit by that rise in living cost. And ultimately, a lot of people are going to be reacting to this budget by realising that they're a lot worse off than they would be.
What do you say to the argument that, of course, the government wasn't, the pandemic, forgive me, was an unprecedented time. The government spent money on a scale it has never done, in peacetime at least, before. And that, although he claims he's being generous with public spending over the next few years, there is need to be cautious, and that the public finances are in a pretty appalling position at the moment.
I mean, he's not got an easy job, but I think we need to remember here that this may be being put forward under the guise of COVID, and obviously COVID has a massive impact on our finances, but it is also showing the true cost here of Brexit, which is just coming through a lot of these problems, the supply chain issues we're having, the rise in spending that's going to be needed to combat this. This is a result of policies that this government brought in 4 years ago, and it's coming to kick them in the back now.
Well, you make that point there. This was Labour's Rachel Reeves, the Shadow Chancellor, making exactly that point responding to the budget yesterday.
Time and again today, the Chancellor compared the investments that he is making to the last decade. Yeah. But who was in charge? Who was in charge in this last decade? They were. But people are getting warm, wise to them. Every month they feel the pinch. They're tired of the smoke and mirrors. They're tired of the bluster, of the false dawns, of the promises of jam tomorrow.
Promises of jam tomorrow, that Labour's Rachel Reeves said. Of course, she took over at last minute because Keir Starmer tested positive for COVID just before the budget. Another, of course, huge role that the Chancellor performs is control over taxation in the country. And there have been huge debates this year about the level of taxation that working people should be given. The level of national insurance was raised just a few months ago. And this was his overall message about what he wants to do with tax over the next few years.
My goal is to reduce taxes. By the end of this parliament, I want taxes to be going down, not up. I want this to be a society that rewards energy, ingenuity and inventiveness. A society that rewards work. That is what we believe on this side of the house. That is my mission over the remainder of this parliament.
His mission, he says, Rosa, is to make sure that it's a society that rewards work. Do you think that's what it's going to do?
I don't think so. No, I think, yeah, you've shown that this isn't a very conservative budget. In normal terms, taxing is going up, which is not typically what Conservatives would like to see. But I think what we're seeing is that where this is happening, it's still happening at a cost to the people who are going to be hit hardest, and that is people who are working harder but aren't getting the results from that. I think it's been shown that it's families who are going to be hit very hard by this, and working families, households where you have at least one person on an income, who are going to be hit hardest by these tax increases. So I think it shows once again that there is a disregard for the working people. Meanwhile, taxes on champagne are going to go down. So let's see if that sums them up.
I did see an article saying that Rishi Sunak mentioned the word alcohol far more than he did education or health in the budget. I can't guarantee that that's true myself, but it's interesting. Now, Rishi Sunak, of course, responding to the economic, announcing economic measures for the country, but on a political level, I think this is interesting because, as you said, it wasn't particularly conservative. Yes, it increased spending, and people will debate the degree to which that spending will get through to the right places. But it leaves the question of where do Labour go now? Because Rachel Reeves is, you know, generally thought to have done pretty well in the House of Commons responding to the budget yesterday. But the real question is a long-term one for Labour. Where do they go if the Conservatives have parked their cars on Labour's lawn? Because they're now the party of spending, and as I said, people will contest whether that spending is in the right places and whether it's to a full enough extent. But it's going to be really interesting over the few years in the run-up to the next general election to see really where Labour goes and how they respond to that. But anyway, that was the budget that happened this week, and of course we will bring you more news on economic measures announced in future weeks. Now, we said at the start of the show, this will not just be an hour of dreary news analysis, and it certainly won't be. We're going to have music as well, and the first track ever on this year's news show. It was chosen by you, Rosa. Would you like to go ahead and introduce it yourself?
Yes, this is a bit of a female-led icon song for all the women staying in tonight. This is Tilted by Christine and the Queens. With Tilted. Now, one of the major stories coming up is COP26. We are counting down the days to the summit, which will be held in Glasgow at the end of this month. Now, one of the announcements this morning may bring a welcome surprise to many students commuting here in Edinburgh. ScotRail have called off strikes, which have been ongoing every Sunday since March and which threatened to wreak havoc with transport plans for the over 25,000 delegates who will be arriving in Glasgow this week. Now, this is the news that ScotRail have called off strikes after promising a 2.5% pay rise and improved conditions, as well as a one-off COP payment. This is obviously big news. COP26 is seeing a massive influx of people to Glasgow, and transport plans were a real threat to that.
Yeah, huge news actually. And also, as we had in the headlines at the top of the hour, Nicola Sturgeon has today called on protesters not to add to the disruption. by taking part in large protests. But I know there will be a lot of large protests. Again, in the headlines, we said that Greta Thunberg will be in Glasgow protesting. Yeah, the ScotRail action was clearly timed to have maximum impact, wasn't it? As, you know, many would argue that that is the entire point of industrial action. And so people can see their case there. But of course, the eyes of the world are on Glasgow, and it is on the Scottish government and the UK government to be putting on a good front and to be welcoming people properly and accommodating them. And it's an interesting story. But I think the government, both in Edinburgh and in London, will be extremely glad that they have called off that strike. Now, speaking this morning on the issue of COP still was David Attenborough, national hero. And yeah, he was explaining, because he has this vision, doesn't he? He has this sort of presence, David Attenborough, that very few other people have in British public life. He has a respectability that everyone shares, and he's clearly so sincere in his beliefs. And he was talking this morning about what he hopes will come out of the summit.
The discovery that the nations of the world joined together and actually did something at COP in this coming conference. Let us see what it does. But I hope and pray that, my goodness, it takes action, that the nations of the world, in the light of the scientific discoveries that this ship will undoubtedly be making, that nations got together and listened to the science of what has to be done.
David Attenborough saying what has to be done there. He's well into his 90s now, isn't he? You know, any time I see him trending on Twitter, I get quite worried. But I think he is still by far the best communicator on this issue because of the experience of the that he's had, because of the way that people have grown up watching him, haven't they, on TV, and can see how much he cares. And I think the issue about COP is this. If you want to distill it down to one thing, it's about the distinction between conversation and action, isn't it? Because we had the Paris Climate Summit, which many people cheered as you know, a landmark in climate legislation, and it was. But the problem was that legislation wasn't binding, and therefore Paris ended up being talking about plans to solve climate change. And the emphasis that politicians and David Attenborough and other campaigners are putting on COP26 is that this doesn't need to be about plans. This shouldn't be about plans or talk. This should be about action. This should be about binding treaties that bind all of the world's nations to reduce their carbon emissions, because it is, of course, that key warming of 1.5 degrees, which scientists fear could happen within the next 20 years and would lead to ecological disaster. It is expected, of course, much more coverage of COP26 in all of the media, including, I hope, here on the Fresh Air News Hour in the weeks to come. But we are approaching the end of the show, Rosa. I just want to say thank you so much for joining me for my first ever one.
Congratulations.
I don't know if you can tell, but I was a bit jittery at the start, and we did have a few technical issues along the way, but we did resolve them. But it has been a real pleasure. And as I say, our slot is Thursday, 6 till 7 p.m. here on Fresh Air Radio. The schedule is every fortnight, but in big news weeks, we're going to be putting on a show, of course. So it's likely that I will be back at the same time next week. Of course, to find out if that's the case and to find out other information about the Fresh Air News Hour and of all our other Fresh Air shows, please follow us on all our socials. If you have a story for us, if you would like to appear on the radio show for interview, if you have something that you think students and the wider Edinburgh community might be interested in, please drop me an email at news@freshair.radio. That's news@freshair.radio. And just before we finish, I said that this would not be a dreary news show, and certainly it won't. We don't want you to leave feeling just more informed than when you arrive, more joyful, more upbeat as well, regardless of the news that you hear. So we're going to play you out with some ABBA. I'm Ollie Lewis. I've been with Rosa Giorgio on the Fresh Air News Hour, and we'll be back the same time next week. Here's ABBA with their brand new song, Just a Notion.